Hi, hello. Welcome to Season 5 of The Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. We talk about money, mental health, relationships, the creative process itself, and everything in between. This season specifically focuses on creativity within the realm of environmental conservation and social public art. I'm your host, Shannon Byrne. Hannah Spencer does all of our design and branding, and Lonnie Webb runs our Instagram and makes many of our visuals. Big thanks to Jeffrey Silverstein, who was a guest on our last season, for letting us use his song, Given the Light, this season's intro music. Hope you all dig it.
Heyo. This episode is with Cynthia Housewort, the founder and president of Princess Beef, a ranch providing 100% grass-fed and finished beef from a Colorado centennial farm since 1999. Their goal is to sustainably and holistically produce the best and healthiest beef and to conscientiously strive to improve the well-being and integrity of our animals and that of the environment where they are raised. They're in Hotchkiss, Colorado, which is just right next to Peonia in the North Fork Valley. And yeah, it was super great getting to talk to Cynthia and visit their property. It is lovely and a very peaceful place. In this episode, she shares how she went from art history major to cattle rancher, why she doesn't want to like to bring her steers to a feedlot, and just in general gives us a really great breakdown of how the cattle industry works and the difference between grass-fed and finished beef and all other beef, as well as some tips on what to look for in the grocery store or butcher or farmer's market when you're buying beef, and some of the benefits of just like how they manage their farm for the environment and yeah, the difference that it makes compared to just your average cattle ranch. I actually found this super fascinating. I currently don't eat meat for the most part. I'm not super strict. And when I do, I try to eat like local and from people like Cynthia. And a big part of that has been, and the reason why I'm not strict when it comes to not eating meat, because it is for animal and environmental reasons, it was like visiting her farm and seeing how happy the animals are and having her explain how it all works to me. So I hope you get something from this and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, y'all.
So to start, can you share a bit about what Princess Beef is?
Mm-hmm. So to do that, I have to give you a bit of my history. Mm-hmm. I grew up outside of Denver, Colorado, and went to a small liberal arts school called Colorado College. I was an art history major, and I had a good friend who was an art studio major, and she had a ranch. Came from a ranch here in Crawford, Colorado. I just thought it would be fun to see what the ranch was like. So she lined up a visit the day that I graduated from college. Mm. And I came out and took part in a two-day cattle drive, moving the 350 head of cows from their ranch up to a permit in the West Elk Wilderness. Mm. And loved it. Long story short, never left.
Oh, wow.
So ended up being their ranch hand for, let's see, about 10 years until I met my husband. Mm. So around 2 years into that job, I was a person who would go out and feed protein pellets to the cows. And there was one cow that was first to the feed wagon every time. And I got to where I could pet her. And I named her Princess. Mm. This is first up, yeah. My little princess. And that year for Christmas, the owners of the ranch gave her to me and her calf.
That's nice.
Yeah, sweet. And from then on, I kept all of Princess's female calves for my herd. And I started marketing her male calves as Princess Beef.
Okay.
So around the same time as I was trying to start marketing my beef, a woman named Jo Robinson, she's a nutritionalist, was writing about all the benefits of grass-finished beef. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to take my little steer calves to a feedlot. I never liked the idea.
Yeah.
And that just backed it up. And then around, I think it was 2002, Michael Pollan had written an article called The Power Steer in New York Times, where he followed the life of a steer from a ranch all the way to a feedlot. Okay. Basically, the end of that said, choose grass-finished beef. Yeah. That's the way to go for an animal. And that's how Princess Beef got started.
Can you explain what a feedlot is?
A feedlot is where ranchers have an option. They can either sell their calves to a feedlot, where their calves go from being on their ranch to being confined in pens where they're fed corn and grain, some hay, a very similar ration. Or they could keep ownership but pay the feedlot to finish their animals.
Right.
And the reason feedlots came about was a surplus of corn after World War II. Mm. They didn't know what to do with it, and they found that beef animals would fatten quite efficiently on corn. And so that's how those feedlots got started.
I know some of this is common sense. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the difference from a consumer standpoint who's eating this meat for grass-fed versus...
Well, there's tons.
Yeah, I know.
But one, the humane aspect, you've got on grass-finished beef, they're out in fresh air. And the way I manage things is they're moved to fresh ground every 3 to 5 days. So they're always eating the best of the best. And then moved on. They're not standing around in their own manure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And fresh air. Plus, what I feel like I'm doing is good for the environment. So my main job is building soil. And I'm doing that using animal impact, using my cows. Okay. So the way I manage is good for the earth. What happens is they graze a certain pasture. They don't graze it all the way down to nothing. They trample in a ton, which is adding organic matter. Yeah. They're spreading their manure. 80% of what goes in a cow comes out of a cow. Mm. So they're spreading it on the ground as fertilizer and building the organic matter. Then you move on. So in a feedlot situation, their manure becomes a problem.
Yeah.
So it's big piles. So you've got to pull in heavy equipment to pull it out. And then spread it out. Again, more fossil fuels. Feeding them in a feedlot. So I have perennial pastures. Mm-hmm. They come up every year. I'm not tilling the earth, exposing microorganisms to heat, mm-hmm. turning them over into the ground so they can't breathe. Where you're putting in corn, unless you're doing no-till, which is still, there still aren't very many people doing no-till ag, but you're tilling up every year, replanting with big machinery, fertilizing with petroleum-based products. So you've got that environmental thing going on with the feedlots. So health-wise, cows were not made to eat large quantities of corn.
Yeah.
The corn makes their system more acidic. They are these great animals with four-chambered stomachs that are fabulous at turning pasture into meat, but they're not so great with the corn. It makes them more acidic. And so if you're fed that kind of diet long enough, you end up getting ulcers, and you have to start giving them antibiotics to keep them alive until they can be butchered. So there you go. Then we're all eating low doses of antibiotics if we're eating feedlot beef.
Right.
We don't ever... I mean, if we have to give antibiotics because an animal's sick, we certainly will. Yeah. But the truth of the matter is, we don't have sick animals.
Yeah.
Very rarely do we have a sick animal. If we do, I will most definitely treat it, but it won't go through Princess Beef. I won't sell it through Princess Beef. It'll go to the sales yard.
I'm assuming you also subscribe to the Happy Beef, Happy. Do you feel that when we eat, most people lived a good life, like...
Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I feel like we evolved eating meat, mm-hmm. that it's not wrong to do it, but I don't want to eat unhappy meat. No. Yeah. I want to know that the animal that's given its life to us has had the happiest life possible.
Right. Yeah. What about the whole cow farting thing and the environment?
You know what? I feel like with grass-finished beef... that you can, you definitely block that out with all the good things you're doing. So the way I'm improving the environment is adding more pasture. I'm improving the soil, which is improving the pastures, which is taking the carbon dioxide out of the air. It's the green plants that are taking it out. So if you're improving the green plants, you are pulling all that out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And turning it into a good thing.
Right. What does your day-to-day look like?
It depends on the season. So I'd say I have pretty distinct seasons. In the springtime, starting around the middle of March, our cows start calving. Mm-hmm. So we make sure throughout the day that nobody's having any issues. I'm still feeding hay a little bit at that time. And then we start irrigating our pastures. I start moving water around. We have pivot sprinkler and some gated pipe. We've tried to do that as efficiently as possible. I also move a lot of electric fence. So in the springtime, when the grass is growing quickly, to avoid overgrazing, I'm out rolling electric fence out and putting in posts about every 3 days. As the growing season slows down, it can go about 5 to 7 days switching pastures. I'm moving two herds. I move the mother cows and their calves. And I also am moving the beef animals. I'm keeping on the beef animals on my best of the best pastures so that they finish very nicely. The cows and calves don't need quite the rich pasture, so they're on more grass and not as much legumes.
So when you say finish, you mean to...
Fatten up. Okay. So yes, you want them fat. So grass-fed beef is sometimes taken a bad rap because people will sell animals that are not finished, that don't have that internal fat. Mm. You know, and so I want a really great eating experience, and they can be just as good as a feedlot. One, we use genetics. I can pick a bull that has been tested for tenderness and marbleizing, and they do that with ultrasound data. So we want a well-marbled meat, and you want them to be fat. So first they grow their frame, and then they start adding all that fat. We want them to be nice and juicy.
So do you do that ultrasound here?
No. I do it when I pick the bulls. So I go through a bull catalog that the bull producer has given us.
Yeah.
And start rating them. Okay. And try and pick the top of that scale.
So when you're selling meat, selling a cow,
mm-hmm.
but is it only males?
So I sell, no, I do both males and females. Yeah. I keep a few for replacement cows. Mm-hmm. So if a cow doesn't have a baby, or if one dies, we'll turn that cow into, I call it whole cow burger. So I don't ever send it to a feedlot. It goes into my ground beef market. And we grind the steaks and the roast, all of it. And it's fantastic hammer. But then to replace it, we'll take a young cow and put it in the herd. But yes, I sell males and females, and I sell it as a quarter, half, and whole beef.
Okay.
And people put in their order. That's what they get. So they get a selection of ground and steaks and roast.
Do you do all the... Is slaughtering the word?
Yeah. No. No. We use a place outside of Grand Junction that does it for us. I don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a job you're interested in.
No, not interested in that.
Yeah. Is it tough giving up the animals?
Yeah. You know what? And this year especially, we have some that are really friendly that come up and we can pet and rub them. Yeah. But again, we've raised them for beef for us. And knowing that they've had the best life possible, it's not so bad. I mean, I feel a little sad, but no. I think the benefits to the earth and to us outweigh that.
Yeah. And you have about 80, 85 at a time?
We have around 85 head, but that's half are mother cows and calves for next year's beef, and then half are the beef that I market every year.
And you said they're about 18 months when they...
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
How long does a cow usually live?
You know, we have, I think the oldest cow that I've kept has been 14 years. They usually calve the second year of their life. They're two when they calve the first time. So a 14-year-old cow will have had 13 calves.
And I eat meat. I'm not,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Not anti any of it. Definitely rogue.
Yeah, I just think that you want to eat meat that is done sustainably.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. How's business been?
Business has been good. I started, this is year 20. I started with one steer and have worked my way up to 40. And right now I'm staying steady. This is where I'm going to be for now. I can manage that without having to hire anybody besides my own kids.
Okay.
My husband helping.
It's so. Just the family running
it? Yeah, just the family.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Well, of course, the butcher plant that we hired a butcher on, but...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Besides that, yeah, it's just us.
Yeah. I guess, what has the drought impacted your...
You know what? It has, for sure, but... I'm not as bad as it could have. So I think what saves us, what makes us more resilient to that, is the way we manage our ground. By pasturing the animals, we're putting a lot back in the soil. We're not just cutting everything for hay and then having a bare ground show. I won't ever cut anything twice for hay. So the places that we cut maybe once for hay, the next time will be grazed.
Okay.
Simply, they just, they're building up that soil. And so that when it rains, the soil is like a sponge and just soaks up the rain. I mean, we stay green. You walked out there with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're also fortunate in the fact that we have pretty senior water rights. Ira's grandfather knew that Rogers Mesa was a pretty good place to be. And we're going to be a month and a half shy of water.
You mentioned that this is your kids are fifth generation
yep.
on this property.
Yeah. And this isn't the first drought we've been through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could see the writing on the wall in February. Mm-hmm. One thing we did was to find a few more pastures around us that we could lease.
Okay.
And we did both hay and pasture on those. I think one neat thing about having Princess Beef is people know us. They know what we're doing. And they like having us.
Can you explain the hay thing?
Mm-hmm. So we live in a climate where we have to be prepared to feed hay.
Okay.
Ideally, it would be great to be able to graze all winter and keep managing our pastures that way. But come December, we usually get a snow and it can crust over and we need to feed them. So we do feed hay. And we put up our own hay. So the cheapest thing is to put up our own hay. And thankfully, we have the equipment to do so. We put up large 1,300-pound round bales.
Okay.
But here's the key. We feed the hay back on the pastures.
Mm.
So instead of feeding them in a feed bunk or feeding them like the feedlots do,
yeah.
we're spreading it back on the fields.
Okay.
Because I call haying, it can be like soil mining. If you're not adding back, all you're doing is taking.
Yeah.
So if you're going to take from a field, you need to feed back on that field.
Mm-hmm.
So then the cows, you know, they won't eat everything. They end up trampling a little bit of it. And we have a feeder that rolls the hay out. And then the cows are always out on pasture.
Through winter and stuff.
Yeah. And we're adding again. We're adding their manure. And we're adding all the little bits and leaves that fall off that they don't eat. Back on.
Do you have any concern for future years in terms of...
No, I think a little bit in terms of water. I think that we are more prepared than some because we put in sprinklers. I think there's way more efficient ways to water now. We have the technology. We all need to be doing it.
Yeah.
There's agriculture does use a tremendous amount of water.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, with this flood irrigating, you're watering below the roots. You don't need to do that. We had applied for a grant through the NRCS and got a wonderful one for a pivot.
What's and the NRCS?
Natural Resource Soil Conservation, I think. I don't know. You'd have to look that one up. But the pivot's fantastic. Before, when we were flood irrigating, I could get over my pastures twice,
okay.
maybe. And now I can get over them five times.
What is it?
What
does get over it?
Get over being able to water everything.
Gotcha.
Or before I could water everything twice, I can do it. Yeah. Get a pipe five times, the sprinkler, which is about 35 acres, I can water all summer.
And you're using less water.
And we're using, less water.
What are some of the things about...
I want to say that I also worry our water that we get mm-hmm. is also heading towards Nevada and California.
Mm.
And they have to get so much of it.
Yeah.
And there's more and more people on this earth. So I think we need to conserve water. I think we need to be prepared that we may not get as much water in the long term.
Yeah.
How are we going to do things?
And that's because Colorado is a watershed for, like, four states, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So supposedly the Colorado River is going to, like, supposed to dry up in, like, the next
Well, I don't know about
decade
that.
Or something.
But, that's I mean, I am a climate change believer, and we're warming up, and this may be this snowfall amount may be the new norm.
Hopefully are we not, ready? Though, right?
Yeah. No, hopefully not, but we need to be farming with less water.
Is there anything else that you're doing other than moving to the sprinkler system to conserve on either a personal or professional ag level?
I'm going to say that's the big one. Yeah, and the way we rotate and manage our pastures to build soil so that when it does rain and when we do sprinkle, it's able to hold the water.
Yeah, because a lot of soil here can be very hard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It just, like, rolls off.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't have that humus that ours does.
Right. Are there a lot of grass-fed beef ranches around here?
You know, there's definitely more popping up. One of the industries that's really growing. So, yeah. I would say I'm about medium on the size scale. Some bigger, some smaller. One thing, I did notice a lot more people. When I started, nobody was doing it. 20 years ago, but yeah, definitely it's become more mainstream, and they even sell grass-finished beef in the grocery store. It is becoming more popular. One thing that I did to differentiate myself was to become certified by both the American Grass-Fed Association and the Animal Welfare Approved certification, just to differentiate myself. I like when people come out and meet us and see our land and see the animals. I invite people to come anytime, but we sell maybe 2/3 of our beef to the Front Range, and people can't always drive over here. So okay. Those certifications, I feel like, help differentiate me. If they're out looking, what do they want?
Can you explain that a bit as a consumer going to buy some meat? I feel like there's a lot of...
I think it's horrible. I think it's super confusing. It's confusing. Like the natural label is that one bothers me to no end. And organic. Both of those two are bad. The organic label, they will certify feedlot beef. I even talked to him in Washington and I said, you know what? I will be happy to certify as organic. We are. We don't use any pesticides or herbicides. And we use only non-GMO seeds if we're going to interseed something. But you can't. People think organic is healthy.
Yeah.
And feedlot beef isn't healthy. It's not healthy for the environment. It's not healthy for the animal. And it's not healthy for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're certifying as organic. I said, you can't do that.
Yeah.
I said, when you quit doing that, I'll certify myself.
Mm. Costs bothers money to get me. Certified, right?
It does. That one is around, to become, for your beef to be certified, you have to certify the ranch, the animals, and the butcher facility.
And how much is it?
It's, 2,000 for each one.
Okay.
Yeah. And, so, the natural label is confusing. It just means no antibiotics, no hormones, but you can still put it in a feedlot. You can still feed it grain that was fertilized or use pesticides on it and GMO.
Yeah.
It's confusing. Yeah. So when I was looking at labels, I thought two that were nice were the American Grass-Fed. I just like the name Grass-Fed so people can see. And the Animal Welfare, too. The humane aspect of that. They come out and audit me every year. So it's nice to be able to tell people, hey, they come out, they check me out different times in the year, and you got to see that you're doing what you say you're doing.
Right.
And I like that certification because it's a birth to slaughter. So a lot of people who are doing grass-finished beef will go to the sales yard and buy calves. Mm. They've just been weaned and then stick them on pasture and sell them as grass-finished beef. We have the mother herd. We have them all the way from birth, so I can tell people exactly what has happened their entire life.
Right.
And I like being able to do that.
Yeah, totally. So when shopping for beef, look for grass-fed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Look, American grass-fed is nice because it has to be born in the USA.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people getting grass-fed beef from, the grass-fed beef you buy in the store could be coming from Mexico. Could be coming from Canada. They don't have to tell you where it came from. They just have to tell you where it was butchered.
Okay.
So they could call it USA, and it's not really. It's just butchered here.
Yeah. And that's a lot of traveling, too, when you think about the footprint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huge footprint.
Yeah. It's tough on a budget too, though. Like, I've definitely had my times where
I could barely make rent, you know? If you want to compare it, you're paying $8 for ground, but you're paying $8 for your steaks.
Yeah.
You were to go to Whole Foods, you'd be paying $30 a pound.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty efficient if you can buy a quarter, half, or whole. The thing is, you have to have the money. You know, I take half down and then the rest at delivery. It's about $700 for a split quarter. But you divide that through the year, it's not so bad.
So you're selling huge chunks of meat to families?
Yes. That's who I really sell to. Yep. Yeah, it's all, it comes frozen.
Okay.
So, yes, when you pick up your beef, it's frozen. Oh. It's around 80 pounds for a split quarter.
Wow.
But, you know, you figure that's 40 pounds of ground. What is that, like packages a month of ground? Yeah. So you'd eat 1 pound a week, not even. It's tacos, spaghetti, you know. It's a nice amount for families.
Yeah.
And pretty efficient.
I bought some ground at Lizzie's yesterday.
Oh, great.
Looking forward to trying it.
Excellent.
Yeah. I know, like, I've become more educated on grass-fed versus, like, just buying whatever probably over the last 5 years. I don't know when it really started seeming like it became more of a...
I think it became more mainstream, especially with that Power Steer article and Michael Pollan writing bestseller books in defense of food. And there was also the book about Fast Food Nation.
Yeah.
He talked about it. He talked about grass-fed beef. That's when I think it became more mainstream. People started realizing that they need to figure out what they're eating.
That changed your business a good amount?
Did that change my business? Yeah, definitely. You know, when I first started, I would write a newsletter 4 times a year and sending it out to everybody I could think of, trying to educate them on the difference. Now you don't have to do that so much.
Yeah.
Now I do more of a once-a-year newsletter with lots of pictures of the ranch so that people can see our day-to-day what we do.
Anything else that you feel people should know about grass-fed or the operation or how their relationship with
I just think that people need to be aware where their food comes from.
Yeah.
I think it's really nice to be able to... There are so many small farmers now. Go and meet the people you're buying your food from. I think you should know exactly what's being put into it.
What's your plan if water becomes like a real issue here in this region? If the shortage becomes unmanageable?
Well, I think we just get more and more efficient, which I think we can. There's more developments. I think farmers and ranchers need to make sure they're putting in drought tolerant plants and grazing like we are and trying to capture as much natural water as they can.
And just really hope for a big snowpack.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you.
The cat run around behind.
Yeah.
You're going to hear that.